I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Tamara Rossman Benjamin, the founder and director of Amcha Initiative, addressing anti-Semitism on college campuses, and the co-winner of the 2016 Kohan Memorial Award for efforts on behalf of the Jewish people. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our two Jewish Mavenah in Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinshinim, Bar El-Kahar and Leah Avuno, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Chanukah Sameach, a happy final day of the Holiday of Lights. And of course, a happy secular new year for 2017. Although this is not a Jewish holiday, there have to be some days of the year that aren't, it's a good time to wish everyone a healthy and happy January 1st. We must note that the 2016 year ended with some complicated and unhappy news about Israel at the UN. In a final act, the long-playing Barack and Bibi Can't Stand Each Other melodrama, soon to be a miniseries on Amazon Prime and Netflix, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations declined to veto yet another UN resolution condemning Israeli settlements in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. The urgency to pass this resolution, and the reason the outgoing Obama administration chose not to veto this time, is the sense among Middle East watchers that the practical possibility for a two-state solution, Israel and Palestine, is passing from the realm of potential dream to impossible one. According to many, this is because of the growth of Jewish population in lands that once were likely to be given to the Palestinians as part of their new country. Without delving too deeply into the practical consequences of this purely ceremonial whipping of Israel, there really aren't any urgent ones, we must note the extreme irony of this latest vote to condemn Israeli settlement activity while the final Battle of Aleppo reached its horrifying climax. Tens of thousands of Syrian civilians were dying, and literally millions of Syrians were homeless, all less than a few hundred miles from Jerusalem. There were no UN resolutions passed about that last week, of course. Somehow the UN continues to see the Middle East solely through the prism of Israeli-Palestinian relations and the non-existent peace process, rather than as the complex mess it actually is. In the last decade, the UN has passed 223 resolutions condemning Israel, and six total resolutions condemning Syria. The location for the past 6 years of the most horrifying humanitarian crisis since World War II. In fact, you can make the case that the greatest threat to peace and security in the whole world today comes as a direct consequence of this brutal Syrian civil war, with ISIS and radicalized Islamists being trained daily to spread terror throughout the free world. But the focus has remained, in the UN at least, stubbornly on Israel, and Secretary of State John Kerry's speech following the resolution vote did nothing to improve matters. In essence, Kerry reiterated the 8 years, and often much more, of U.S. administration efforts to strengthen Israel and effectuate a two-state peace process. Like so much of U.S. foreign policy in the last, 16 years? 24 years? It didn't make much sense. And it didn't make much sense to make that speech now, for sure. Frankly, the non-veto by the U.S. was a large strategic mistake, at least politically here in America, where most of the Jewish community, including groups that are moderate to liberal supporters of Israel, did not agree with it at all. When you stake out a position at the UN that both the Orthodox Union and the Union for Reform Judaism agree is wrong, you have done something uniquely dumb. The best analysis came from Anshul Pfeffer, a columnist for the left-wing Israeli paper Haaretz and The Economist. He said about John Kerry's speech, and it applies, of course, to President Obama's foreign policy and the UN vote, Kerry's swan song was one of crushing impotence and absolute irrelevance. No surprise there. As America's senior diplomat, Kerry allowed Vladimir Putin to have his way in Ukraine and Syria, acquiesced to Iran's growing malignant influence across the Middle East, and abandoned Syria's rebels as they were massacred by the Assad regime. Kerry's heart has always been in the right place. He loves Israel. But now even the Israelis who agree with him in principle have joined the long list of those he has let down. The growth of Israeli population in the West Bank and East Jerusalem is a serious impediment to any potential peace settlement, as is the continued Palestinian intransigent embrace of terror and the refusal to recognize Israel's existence and the horrifying results of Israel's unilateral withdrawal from Gaza 11 and a half years ago and giving it to the Palestinians. The U.S. should have vetoed yet another stupid U.N. resolution laying all the blame for a stalemated situation on Israel. And the UN should address the disastrous situations in the region, in particular Syria and Iraq, not Israel. On a happier note, to play us in this morning of the final day of Hanukkah, I guess it is still a Jewish holiday, isn't it? Here's Jewish reggae hip-hop star Matisyahu, his song Happy Hanukkah.
Tonight is the night, sunset, twilight, head back, come along, take flight. High and twinkle and a sprinkle and a shooting in the sky, dime shine and I'm feeling alright. Light a candle for the one you love, with sunlight from below to above. 8 nights, celebrate till I fly in the sky like a dove. Let me unwind as I light up a flame in the name of the Lion of Judah. Drop like a hammer when I fall like the rain, sun shower, feel a baba when I hit like a train.
That was a past guest of Two Jewish, Matisyahu, singing Happy Hanukkah for the Festival of Lights and Latkes that ends today. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish, Professor Tammy Rossman Benjamin, saw the rapid growth of anti-Semitism on college campuses in the U.S. and around North America and decided to do something about it in an intelligent and effective way. She is a co-winner of the 2016 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for work on behalf of the Jewish people. And she's back here on Two Jewish to talk about recent developments in anti-Semitic activity at universities, efforts to control them, when we return in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
Hi, my name is Lauriella, and I'd like to tell you how you can help send children like me to a Jewish day school at no cost to you. Arizona allows its taxpayers to receive a tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations such as JETCO. JETCO is the only tuition organization solely dedicated to Jewish education in Tucson. JETCO provides scholarships to children who attend qualified private schools like Congregation Anshai Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, which educates students from grades K through 8th. You may give up to $1,087 for single tax filers and $2,173 for married couples who file jointly. Jewish education nurtures Jewish identity for generations of students like me, so please go online and visit our website at www.jetco.org or give Jetco a call at 647-8442. Again, that's 647-8442. And tell them Lauriella sent you.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning. Tammy Rossman Benjamin is the co-founder and leader of the Amicha Initiative, protecting Jewish students on campus across the country. She's also a co-winner of the 2016 Kohan Foundation Memorial Award for work on behalf of the Jewish people. Good morning and welcome back to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show again.
It's a pleasure to have you. I wish we could report that things were suddenly getting better on campus for Jewish students. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. We've been talking for a while about the prevalence of pro-Palestinian and anti-Jewish, anti-Israel, and really, frankly, anti-Semitic activity on campus. It's been joined recently by some anti-Semitic activity by neo-Nazi and other groups on the right. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, most of the anti-Semitism that we've been seeing is in one way or another linked to anti-Zionism, and it has been fomented by things like the BDS movement and just sort of virulent and hateful anti-Israel rhetoric that really moves into, crosses the line into anti-Semitism. I mean, that's what we had been seeing for several years now, actually, and that's still around, and it's in some ways it's even really increased. But we've also seen the rise of the, as you were saying, the sort of neo-Nazi white supremacist, really associated with very vile groups that are yes, very anti-Jewish and very deeply, sort of profoundly anti-Semitic in terms of their rhetoric and on flyers that are getting sent to, let's say, university printers across the country about, you know, sort of kill Jews and the white supremacist language, not only about Jews but often targeting Jews. And in the wake of the election, we've certainly seen an increase of that. But we've also seen an increase of, of sort of anti-Israel rhetoric as well. And we've seen a certain ambiguity in classic anti-Semitic themes like swastika and Holocaust themes that we don't know where they're coming from, whether they're coming from people who are reacting positively to the president-elect or negatively to the president-elect. But what we're seeing is that Jews are caught in the crossfire, which makes them, from our perspective, even more vulnerable than before, and that's a real problem.
It is a huge problem, and we'll talk actually how the swastika has suddenly made this horrific comeback on college campuses when we come back in just a few moments here on Two Jewish with Tammy Rossman Benjamin. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So your product is kosher?
Yes, the base ingredients, the propylene glycol vegetable glycerin, are both certified kosher USP grade. It's basically the same product that's put in asthma inhalers.
Where do you get your flavorings from?
Our flavorings come from Flavor Art in Italy. It is definitely the finest flavorings in the world.
And people have a variety of choices.
Yes, they do. We've got over 500 flavors.
Now, the quality of what you provide is very important.
Yes, it is. When people come in, we first find out what kind of cigarettes they've been using, so we know the approximate level of nicotine they'll need. Then we fit them with a flavor that would be perfect for them.
How can people find out more? Where can they go?
They can do one of a couple of things. They can visit us on our website at freedomsmokeusa.com. That's all one word. Or call us on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
Thanks so much.
A pleasure.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners.
with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award in 2016, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or akvel, please email us at tojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18. Or visit our website at tojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America for Jewish Podcasts, according to Moment Magazine. The world is always changing, but nothing illustrates this quite as well as a video that's gone around the internet. I'm not sure if it's exactly viral, but it could definitely give you a contact high. It's called Nana Marijuana's Latke Making Video, and it goes like this.
I've combined marijuana flour and regular flour in equal amounts, and I'm going to stir it to combine it well before I add it to the potatoes and onion mixture. A little at a time. You need to make sure that all of them get a little taste of this. The latkes are being made with marijuana flour.
I'm not sure if this is a sign the apocalypse is near or a good idea. Probably the first of those. When combined with a Hanukkah menorah, a Hanukkiah available this year, made out of glass and called, I kid you not, the Bong Menorah, and selling for $600. That's a lot of green, if you know what I mean, in every way. This was apparently a year to turn Hanukkah into a newly high holiday, a way to get lit as you light candles. Or as Adam Sandler put it,
so drink your gin and tonica and smoke your marijuana. Happy Hanukkah.
As my parents would certainly put it, oy veizmir. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi, and Happy New Year.
Happy secular New Year to you, or Happy Sylvester, as they say in Israel. It's also the kind of conclusion of Hanukkah, the end of our Jewish minor festival, our biggest minor festival, I guess. We were talking a little bit about major and minor festivals, and the fact that it's a secular New Year gives us kind of an intro as well.
Right, and I made sort of a misleading statement because I said that Hanukkah is a minor holiday in part because it's not referred to in the Bible, but Purim is a minor holiday, which is referred to in the Bible. In fact, there's a whole book devoted to it, the Book of Esther. So that's really not the criterion that distinguishes between major and minor holidays. One criterion is whether the rabbis ruled that you can go to work or that you have to abstain from work. So on what we define as minor holidays, Orthodox Jews can go to work and live pretty normal lives.
Yeah, I mean, except on Shabbat, and that would obtain whether it was a holiday
right,
or not.
That's irrelevant. Correct. For the holidays in themselves, like Purim and Hanukkah and whatever,
Tu B'Shvat,
you can go to work.
Correct.
Whereas on major holidays, you can't work, and they're as restricted as Shabbat, in some ways more restricted. So what makes the difference? Well, first of all, there's the three pilgrimage holidays, where people went to the temple and had prescribed sacrifices, and those are Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot. That's in a random order.
Yes, it is.
Actually, in correct order, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot.
Right.
Okay, so I mean, what's interesting about those three holidays is that they're very temple-centered, but they also have both agricultural roots in the agricultural calendar and historic roots in the history of the Jewish people. I mean, Pesach is theoretically the exodus from Egypt, but it's also the festival of spring and spring planting. Shavuot, 7 weeks later, is a harvest festival.
The first harvest, also, the harvest, right?
It's also commemorates historically the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai.
Right.
And Sukkot, same deal. Historically, it commemorates wandering around the desert and living in temporary makeshift dwellings. But agriculturally, and it probably the roots of all these holidays were agricultural, it has to do with the fall harvest. And that's why we hang fruits and vegetables from the roofs of our sukkahs when we build them,
right?
If we build them.
Right, and in a way, Hanukkah is kind of Sukkot late because that's okay, when they get to the Thanksgiving festival. But I'm just messing up
confusing the issue.
Indeed. Well, it's Jewish. It has to be confused.
Right. Okay. So those are three obvious major holidays, right, with all kinds of historic bases and agricultural bases. So they're based really in two different calendars. A more difficult question, because it's less biblical and less temple-centric, are the so-called high holy days, which are certainly major holidays, but Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and the 10 days of atonement in between them, that's a whole different set of rules, not related to any agricultural calendar, not related to pilgrimages, and for most Jews, those have become the major holidays. And a lot of Jews don't know much about Sukkot or Shavuot. They may know about Passover, yeah. But I mean, you're a congregational rabbi. Would you care to comment?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the high holy days, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, are the most important for most people. And then Passover and Hanukkah are probably tied. And most people don't remember Shavuot much. And they hear about Sukkot at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and maybe do something. But that's a bit of an exaggeration, but not much. So I do think that those associations of major and minor are confusing, because the truth is Jewish observance changes over time. And, you know, we have such an incredibly rich calendar that some things become more important and some become less. Tom, happy secular New Year on this theme of festivals and end of Hanukkah, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
We welcome our Shin Shin, our Israeli representative here on Two Jewish, Bar Al-Kacher. Boker Tov, Bar, and Chag Sameach.
Boker Tov, Avai. Chag Sameach.
Happy Chanukah. We're near the end of Chanukah now. I know that's another holiday, New Year's, but I understand in Israel it's not such a big deal. So I've been screwing up your last name pretty regularly on Two Jewish. Can you explain where your last name comes from, where your family is from originally?
Sure, why not? My last name is El-Kachar, as actually you did pretty good this time.
Yeah. El-Kachar, all right.
Yeah, good.
Vaguely close.
that's not that bad. I've heard a lot worse. And, well, basically, it has two separate meanings that I've always encountered, because my family, originally, my ancestors came from Spain to Turkey.
Sephardic Jews from Spain.
Exactly, Sephardic Jews from Spain who now reside in Turkey. And El-Kachar, one of the meanings is from Cairo, El Kahir, and Cairo, Egypt. And some parts of my family have moved to Egypt and some stayed in Turkey, but they also changed their name once some of my family moved to Egypt, and they all changed their name to El Kahir, so they can all be recognized.
Do you know the original name? The original Sephardic name before, you know, 1492?
I guess that got lost.
Kind of got lost.
It's the other meaning, because the other meaning in Turkish means El Kahir. Al-Kahar, meaning one of the names of God.
Wow.
The great. So I'm not really
So that's a better
sure.
name than that you're from Cairo, but either way, it's a pretty interesting name.
It is.
We talked a little bit about Hanukkah last week, actually pretty extensively, but in Israel there's a particular observance of Hanukkah that we don't have here in America. This whole festival, can you explain that?
Yeah, it's exactly how you said it. It's kind of, it looks odd from the side because it's such a huge propaganda thing, and it's like a huge show. So basically what Festigal is you take the biggest stars of today's TV shows and today's propaganda and all the modern things that you know from TV, you put them on one show and you bring all of your kids to see it. And I guess, I've never been to one, but you spend a lot of money.
They're very expensive. Yeah. That's the one thing I've heard.
Yeah, because they're really expensive because mostly everybody wants to go, because all the kids want to go and see their favorite TV stars. So what they do is they recur sometimes like people with superpowers, superheroes, or they do a throwback festival, or they do Last one was, I think, something with animals. I can't remember, but it's very peculiar. And every year they do something different to make all the kids come there. And it's this huge...
To make their parents pay for all these very expensive tickets to make their kids come
that's
there.
That's true. That's the
And I'm sure
part.
They sell merchandise all over the place outside.
Of course they do. And
for some reason, this is associated with Hanukkah and the victory for religious freedom.
Maybe it's the victory for the people who sell the tickets. I'm not sure, but it makes sense.
Well, there are some good things about Israel that we don't have and I'd like to see come here, but there's some things about Israel that I'm really happy we don't yet have here in America.
Well, maybe you could do a different show, I'm not sure, but like reasonable tickets.
And maybe focused on Hanukkah.
Yes.
Thanks so much, Bar, and a happy secular new year, or happy Sylvester, as they call it in Israel, and a happy end of Hanukkah.
Thank you. You too, Rabbi.
Take care. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher, head of the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Boker Tov, John.
Boker Tov.
So, happy secular new year.
2017, yes.
Oh my gosh, hard to believe. You know, they say that the month of January is when more gym memberships and health club memberships are sold than any other month of the year.
Huh.
And by March, people are not renewing. So we always want to try new things, lose 20 pounds, right. Get in shape, get stronger. But maybe what's important in this new year is to think about the good stuff that we can bring forward in
right.
the new year.
Yeah.
That takes attention too.
Sure. And there's, you know, there's always an interest in what's new, what can I do differently? How can I do better and improve myself? And those things are terrific. But yeah, sometimes, especially when we look at the statistics, there's a flash in the pan kind of a syndrome. So yet, there are still things that we bring forward. You know, what did we learn in 2016? What have we been learning on this journey that is important? What was valuable? What's meaningful that we're bringing forward into 2017? And, you know, as I talk with people, a lot of people are tired of 2016. It seemed to be a difficult year on many fronts. But what were the positives? What were the silver linings? Every challenge brings an opportunity. Every obstacle brings, you know, a chance for collaboration and getting around a problem and solving things together. So what is it that we're bringing forward into 2017 that we value?
It's a great comment. You know, there was so much focus on politics in 2016. Yeah. And I think sometimes people forget that, well, politics is interesting and sometimes it's important. It doesn't really affect our daily lives nearly as much as we like to think it does.
There's a lot more exposure today. And we invite things in to our world in times where, you know, historically, maybe you didn't have those opportunities. And yeah, I'm talking about social media and cell phones. And so there's a presence that I think brings up the intensity of the experience. And that was certainly something that you could see happening throughout the election cycle this year. And yet, you know, out of that process, in terms of society, we see different things happening. We see reactions taking place. Communities rallying together around a cause to protect citizens, for example. And so it'd be interesting to see how social dynamics play out in this kind of new climate we have in America. And again, you know, what are those values from 2016 that were important to us that we're bringing forward into this new era, this new year?
And maybe it's a good reminder to focus on those things that were good in our lives that aren't necessarily so public, that maybe didn't only happen through the screen.
Absolutely.
Of our phone held in our hands.
You know, and that's kind of touching back onto the 8 days of gratitude, the 8 nights of gratitude for
Since
Hanukkah.
This is the last day of Hanukkah.
That's right. And so that's a great value to bring forward, you know, looking at the things that are good in our lives and in our world and appreciating them.
Good thing to remember as we begin this year. Thanks, John, and happy secular new year.
Happy new year. Wishing everybody a great 2017.
And happy end of Hanukkah. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates serving Tucsonians living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Gero Psychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A grandson asks his wealthy old Zadie, Morris, how he made his money. Morris fingers his wool vest and says, "Well, sonny boy, it was 1932, the depths of the Great Depression. I was down to my last nickel. I invested that nickel in an apple. I spent the whole day polishing that apple, and by the end of the day, I sold that same apple for 10 cents. Next morning, I invested those 10 cents in two apples. I spent the whole day polishing them and sold them at 5 p.m. for 20 cents. I did this for a month. By the end of this, I had accumulated the sum of $1.60. And then my wife's Uncle Bernie died and left us $2 million. That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well and be so fortunate too. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion Vayigash begins with the climax of the great Joseph story, which has filled the last sections of the book of Genesis. Joseph is the powerful ruler of Egypt, now richest country of the ancient world. His miraculous ascent from slavery and prison to the heights of political power, well, it's the stuff dreams are made of. He is the master of all he surveys, subservient only to a pharaoh who trusts him completely. He's handsome, rich, hugely powerful, with a wife and two fine sons, completely assimilated into Egypt's elegant culture, and still comparatively young. The world sits at his manicured feet. But wait, there's more. For into this idyllic scene blunder Joseph's early tormentors, the very half-brothers who taunted and beat him up. These are the conniving thugs who stripped him and tossed him into a pit in the earth and sat down to eat lunch, debating while he listened whether to kill him or just abandon him to thirst and starvation, and then sold him into slavery in a foreign land instead. Now, 20 years later or so, he has the opportunity to return the favor, to exact at least a psychological vengeance on these half-brothers. After a sequence of twists and turns, Joseph has manipulated them into a state of confusion and terror, unmanned these arrogant, unruly rural ruffians into fearful submission. He has had his dish of revenge served cold and seems to be enjoying it. But then something changes in Joseph. Perhaps he simply tires of psychologically torturing his half-brothers. Perhaps it is that he's finally seen his full brother Benjamin again, only living reminder of his dead mother Rachel. Perhaps it's that the fullest measure of revenge is magnanimity. Perhaps it's simply that Joseph's exceptional ability to act pragmatically exerts itself. He has to end the cat-and-mouse game one way or another. Or maybe it's the stirring confessional speech his powerful half-brother Judah delivers that brings Joseph to a new psychological place. Near the beginning of Vayigash, in the dramatic high point of the story, Joseph chooses to reunite with his brothers and his family. He sends out the advisors, counselors, and courtiers, crying out in a voice loud enough to be heard by all. He tells the brothers he is Joseph. Weeping, he embraces his brother Benjamin and asks, Is my father still alive? One can imagine the shock of that moment even now, 3,600 years after the events described. The brothers may have had an inkling that he was indeed Joseph. It's implied in the story, but the full revelation must have been stunning nonetheless. Their worst fears are realized. They have been and are now completely in the power of a despised half-brother they comprehensively wronged. What will happen? Joseph moves immediately. He reassures them and relieves their fears. He gently reminds them that he is the authority now. Everyone will move down to Egypt and live in land he provides. Jacob comes down to Egypt to his father. The family is reassembled, but in a very different configuration. The unquestioned new patriarch is Joseph. The great story will continue in a new land and with a new direction. There's something about the Joseph story that compels us to examine our assumptions about how things work in our world. The unpredictable occurs. What we expect is often not what happens. Fate plays a role. In the best of circumstances, and with God's help, our own actions, like Joseph's, may begin with base motivation and yet still rise to a level of magnanimity and grace. We can pray so. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, Tammy Rossman Benjamin, the founder of the Amcha Initiative and co-winner of the 2016 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for work on behalf of the whole Jewish people, will tell us what's happening now on college campuses, how anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism have increased, the efforts to control and improve the climate for Jewish students, and the new dangers posed by right-wing anti-Semitism at universities. Find out when we return here on To Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you or a loved one is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, managing the healthcare maze might be one of the hardest things you ever do. We're Advocation Services, private patient advocates, serving Tucsonans living with cancer. We focus on helping you while you focus on getting better. Visit us at advocationservices.com or call us at 616-0005.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Actress Carrie Fisher, whose grit and wit made Star Wars Princess Leia an iconic and beloved figure to millions, died last week in Los Angeles. She was just 60 years old.
I don't know who you are or where you came from, but from now on, you do as I tell you, okay?
The opinionated actress and advocate got her start in Hollywood as a seductive teen in the 1975 film Shampoo with Warren Beatty. She was the daughter of screen legend Debbie Reynolds and Jewish singer Eddie Fisher. Carrie Fisher's biggest break as an actress came a few years after she dropped out of high school to appear alongside her mother on Broadway, going into the family business. She beat out the likes of Jodie Foster and Amy Irving for the part of Princess Leia in George Lucas' original 1977 Star Wars. She was only 19 years old when she filmed the role. Her tough-as-nails princess was strong and independent, and the role positioned Fisher in the decades that followed as both a feminist icon and a sci-fi nerd sex symbol. The original Star Wars became the second highest grossing movie of all time, after adjusting for inflation, behind Gone with the Wind.
It turned Carrie Fisher into an overnight star, reinforced by the sequels, 1980's The Empire Strikes Back and 83's Return of the Jedi. After Star Wars, Fisher had memorable supporting roles as a vengeful ex in The Blues Brothers, a supportive pal to Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal in When Harry Met Sally. Meryl Streep played a Carrie Fisher character in Postcards from the Edge, based on Fisher's own semi-autobiographical novel about life as a recovering addict. Carrie Fisher published multiple books, including a memoir, The Princess Diarist. Fisher was also known around Hollywood as a script doctor. She worked on films like The Wedding Singer and Sister Act. 4 decades after the first Star Wars, the actress reprised her most iconic role in 2015's Star Wars The Force Awakens just last year. She was also digitally recreated and appeared briefly as a young Leia in the current Star Wars spinoff Rogue One. Carrie Fisher dated singing legend Paul Simon for more than a decade. She was briefly married to him in the 1980s. I saw her appear on stage with Simon and Garfunkel in the 80s in Los Angeles when they were touring together. Paul Simon started his song Hearts and Bones with the lyric, "One and one half wandering Jews," about himself and Carrie Fisher.
One and one half wandering Jews, free to wander wherever they choose.
Although not religious, Carrie Fisher often tweeted about her Jewish cultural connections. She became a witty and vocal advocate for the dangers of drug abuse and against the objectification of women. In her books Wishful Drinking and Princess Diarist, Carrie Fisher wrote about her struggles in overcoming alcohol. Tragically, Carrie Fisher's mom, screen legend Debbie Reynolds, who like her daughter became a teen star in the musical Singing in the Rain, died just a day after her own daughter's death. And in New York, Rachel Fryer of Brooklyn officially became the first Hasidic woman sworn in as a judge in New York State. Fryer is a mother of six, a former lawyer who practiced commercial and residential real estate law. And she was sworn in last week as a civil court judge in Kings County's 5th Judicial District. She won that post in a September election there in Brooklyn. It includes several Hasidic neighborhoods. At the swearing-in ceremony, Hasidic performer Lipa Schmelzer sang God Bless America in Yiddish, wearing a white suit with red and blue doodles. Judge Ruchi Fryer, who is 51, worked as a legal secretary and paralegal to support her husband's Talmud study. She's a graduate of Touro College, Brooklyn Law School, and founded the all-female EMT agency Ezras Nashim. And that's the two Jewish News of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back the two Jewish our guests this morning. Tammy Rossman Benjamin is the co-founder and leader of the Amcha Initiative, which addresses the rise in anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism on college campuses across America. It has long seemed to me that this has been a rising and dangerous problem for the Jewish community, and that so much of the Jewish world has been focused on other issues, lobbying for Israel and Washington, and hasn't really addressed the campus challenges. Do you think that's really fair?
I think it's becoming less and less fair.
Okay, well, that's good to hear.
Yeah, no, I do think, and there's some recent developments that I think are actually very positive, and make me very optimistic, because, you know, one of the problems that we had when we started Amcha in 2012 is that yes, what you were saying was quite true, which was the Jewish community had not been focused enough on what was happening on campuses, and on the way in which this sort of rising anti-Zionist activity and sentiment that was really showing itself, manifesting in this growing BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions, anti-Israel boycott movement, was really picking up steam on college campuses in particular. And yes, there was an attempt to sort of put money into Israel advocacy and to try to fight, you know, the image of Israel's waning image. But that, you know, that from our perspective, that wasn't getting at the real problem, which was the impact of this stuff on Jewish students. And I think within the last couple of years that the Jewish community has really woken up. And I think it's really important. It's critically important that they have. But they have. I know in the effort that we spearheaded to try to get the University of California to adopt measures, and in fact a statement that really directly addressed anti-Semitism and acknowledged that it was in fact, or at least its current manifestation is often anti-Zionism, and to treat anti-Semitism, including in its contemporary form of anti-Zionism, as a bigotry that's no less discriminatory than racism or sexism or homophobia. And we actually were very successful in that, but it would not have happened had basically every mainstream Jewish group weighed in, including Hillel International and the ADL and the AJ Committee. And that was really hugely important, that kind of united focus within the Jewish community to this particular problem, the problem of Jewish students on college campuses, was critical. And what just happened a couple of weeks ago is another huge and important step forward that was only possible because of the mainstream Jewish groups really understanding the problem and taking critical steps to do something about it. And that was an effort by AIPAC and the ADL and the federations, Jewish federations of North America, to make sure that Jewish students have protections at the federal level, because until now the protections for Jewish students have been either really inadequate or I would actually say non-existent, to the extent that I've been involved in efforts to try to ensure protections for Jewish students at the federal level. We've been very disappointed by the federal government. The Department of Education has not extended adequate protection to Jewish students. And so with the last couple of weeks, I don't know if you heard about it, but there was a bill that actually passed unanimously in the Senate.
Right. But it didn't get through the House.
Well, it didn't get through the House. But I step back and I just look at what that effort entailed and how it came about and who brought it forward in terms of the Jewish groups that made that happen. And it is just so heartening that the groups that I would say 5 years ago were not really focused on campus and on protection for Jewish students are now very much so. And to me, that's as I said, it's really heartening and it's really important. I think without that, we will not succeed. With it, it will be a big challenge, and we can succeed. But without it, we won't succeed.
The swastika has been, since Nazi times, a horrifying symbol to not only Jews but to many Americans. It's making a kind of comeback on campus and around America since the election campaign of the fall. Can you address that a little bit?
Nazism is certainly probably the greatest of the two evils. It's the greater of the two evils. And so when in terms of trying to demonize a group, that is, I guess, the most powerful tool or symbol with which to do that. It's not only applied to Jews, but certainly when one sees a swastika, especially if one is a Jew, that it certainly has a resonance for Jews that it doesn't necessarily have for other racial ethnic groups. And so yes, I mean, I think we've come to a time in our society and in America, I think throughout the world, but I think especially in America and especially with this unbelievably difficult election, and it's not just the election itself, but the run-up and after, that we have become a very, and even before that, I mean, we are becoming an ever more divided country in so many ways, and deeply divided in something that I haven't, in my lifetime, I have never seen an America as divided as I feel that we are now. And when you're so divided and there's so much unbridled, I think, passion and animosity for you know, from one group towards the other across that divide, that, you know, that people use in their, you know, sort of in some ways unthinkingly or without the proper consideration, they use symbols of hate that are like swastikas in order to really express what they feel about another group. Now they use it. That symbol is really, as I said, it has particular resonance for Jews, who's, you know, a third of our people were slaughtered in the Holocaust. So it's you know, it's really, and you know, many Jews had lost family and you know, even were, you know, in the Holocaust or were born to are you know, the children of Holocaust survivors. And it's just wrenching, emotionally wrenching, to see that, even if it wasn't meant necessarily by the perpetrator directed at Jews, it always has, it will always have that resonance.
You know, we were talking before we started recording about when you see a swastika next to Trump, it could be someone who's associating Trump with the Nazis in a horribly negative way. It could be someone who's a neo-Nazi who's a supporter of Trump. You don't even know what it means anymore.
That's right. There's this ambiguity, again, because it's become such a, it's in the arsenal of both camps,
right?
It's become a symbol that just is pure hatred for the other. And again, for a Jew, it doesn't matter where it's directed. It always has to affect them in a very negative way and make them feel vulnerable. And that's what we care, you know, that's what we do. That's what our organization does, and that's what we care about is the vulnerability of Jewish students and making sure that they, you know, that they have the proper protection, you know, to be able to go to college and have the same experience as their peers as they should have, and so yes, it doesn't in some ways it doesn't really matter where it comes from, whether it comes from opposing camps. They could both be, it's the where they're both, you know, it's like you're both using bullets, you're both using swastikas, and it's just you know, it's just a means to hurt somebody. It's not necessarily attached to one side or the other ideologically. I think it used to be, and I think now it's not. Now it's been really used as a symbol of hate, and you know, as I said, one which the Jew feels, you know, very strongly.
Of course. I want to thank Tammy Rossman Benjamin for a great visit here on Too Jewish. People can find out more not only about your work, but about anti-Semitism on campus at AMCHA Initiative, which is amchainitiative.org online. And we look forward to having you here in Tucson on January 13th at the Cohen Foundation Awards.
Thank you. And, really looking forward to being there.
Me too. Thanks so much. And we will see you soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. When we return on To Jewish in just a moment, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be the second co-winner of the 2016 Cohan Memorial Foundation Award, Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, founder and CEO of the International Fellowship of Christians and Jews. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning on Two Jewish comes from Cantor Dudu Fischer, his song Shana Tova, a good new year. My friends, have a Chag Chanukah Sameach, a very happy final day of the holiday of Chanukah, a happy beginning to 2017, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Shana Tova, Shana Tova, Anava. Tavi slicha, gam ahava, tavi pius, vegam shalva. Yamim holchim, yamim baim, silchi gam at lachataim. Rabbi cholim, simchi noflim, bechesed uverachamim. Shana tova, kirvi halom, veyad hoshiti leshalom. Shana tova. Shana tova, ba'anava, rabba hine kreva, tavi slicha, gam ahava, tavi pius, vegam shalva.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.